Thank you.
Wow. Actually, this is the first time I've ever been to Sherrington and Folkestone, and Dave and Karen showed me the harbour. It's such a beautiful place here. It's amazing. The sun was out by the sea. Okay, so I'm Jamie. I'm from southeast London. We live about a mile from the Thames, so I get to walk along the River Thames and enjoy the river, and it's great to be near water. So tonight, I believe what we're going to look at is the real invitation that the gospel provides to live self-forgetful. That the gospel holds out the invitation to no longer be living your life craving a verdict. To live absolutely free of the power of accusation, and to no longer be living your life trying to gather a defense for the against the prosecution. And the invitation to be who you're made to be and be part of the mosaic that God's creating in the world, both individually and as a community, without any competition, comparison, perfectionism, or shame. And all that's possible. And in order to become self-forgetful, the big enemy we need to know how to handle and live resilient against is shame. And I want to just say this before I start looking at the topic of shame. One of the things I will not be doing is I will not be asking anybody to stand who feels they're in shame. Because that makes people terrified for the whole time that there's going to be some kind of shaming opportunity in the meeting. There's going to be none of that. Because really inspired by the teaching of Brené Brown, I know Karen's talked to you about that, is that shame actually is a universal human experience and is not just for some people who have done particularly bad things. And according to researchers, the only types of people who don't experience shame are psychopaths because they have no capacity for empathy. So either you want to acknowledge that, yes, I sometimes struggle with shame, or you want to stand up and say, yeah, I'm a psychopath. I mean, I prefer to say, yes, I experience shame. Yeah. One of our favourite TV shows as a family is Bear Grylls the Island. And you know, they 12 ordinary people who land on a tropical island, and they always land in the swamp, in the mangrove swamp. And their first challenge is to get out of the swamp. Because you can't make a camp in the swamp, you can't make a home in the swamp, you can't make a life in the swamp because there's no light, there's no water, there's just creepy crawlies all over the floor. They need to get out of the swamp and they need to get to the beach. Researchers have said that shame is like the swampland of the soul. And shame is a lethal thing. Shame creates real pain. Shame actually creates real pain that is experienced like physical pain. Brené Brown talks about shame being like a trauma, you know, something traumatic that we, when we're in shame, and talk about what that is a little later, when we're in shame, it's traumatic and it's painful. Shame is deadly. If we start living our life only in the swampland, shame will creep into every corner of our lives. It will creep into every corner and it will begin to shape everything. Shame has the power to shape how you plan, how you dream, the choices that you make. Shame has the capacity to cause people to marry a certain type of person, to choose a certain type of job, to be hidden and not seen. Shame is a powerful, lethal, deadly force. And so what is shame? Well, you and I, our most basic fundamental thing we need is to genuinely connect to other people. That's our, we are hardwired to be in community, to be in family. That's why churches like this are amazing, because you're building a family. And a fundamental need of humanity and human beings is to connect and to belong in family. And shame is something that attacks our capacity to truly connect and truly belong. So to live in true connection, we need to be seen, authentically seen. But the swampland leads us to want to hide and disappear. Shame is the intensely painful experience of believing that you are unworthy to connect and to belong and to be seen. Shame is that feeling that you can either live in all the time, or you can dip in and out of feeling, actually, I'm flawed, I'm broken, and I'm unworthy to be seen, I'm unworthy to connect, I'm unworthy to belong. Now, guilt and shame are two really different things. Guilt is, I've done something wrong. It's quite easy to confess our guilt and say, I said this and I was wrong. I did this and I was wrong. Shame is believing I am wrong. It's the feeling of I am fundamentally flawed, that I am a mistake. Guilt says, I made a mistake. Shame says, an identity statement, I am a mistake. Shame speaks to your identity. It speaks to your sense of self. Shame makes you walk around feeling there's something profoundly wrong with me. It can be, like guilt can be, I made a few poor choices. So as a leader, you might think, actually, I made a few poor choices. When it becomes shame, you say, I am a bad leader. I am. It's my identity. It can be in parenting. You think, actually, I made a few bad choices as a parent. But when shame gets a grip of you, the person says, my identity is I am a bad parent. It's an identity statement. So how do we find ourselves in the swampland? How do we find ourselves in shame? Shame can get people and get us into the swampland because of maybe something that happened to us. Sometimes a person can live with a sense of I'm unworthy to be seen, to connect and to belong, because maybe they've been through a divorce and feel, I've been through this divorce and it was my fault and I am now a bad person. I can't ever be truly seen and connect and to belong because I'm flawed, because I've been through this. Sometimes shame can get somebody because of a business failure. Something went bankrupt. And you think, it's not just I made a few bad choices as an entrepreneur and a business owner. I was a bad business owner. I am a bad person. So shame can get you that way. Shame can get you because of the things you did or the things you didn't do. Shame can get you because of the things you've said or the things you didn't say. Shame can get you because of a goal you didn't accomplish. You thought, I'm going for this, I'm going for this, I'm going for this, and then you didn't quite achieve the goal, and then you feel, right, my identity now is, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy to connect. I'm not worthy to belong. Shame can actually get us because of the fear of being ordinary. There's something around our culture right now about being extraordinary and being phenomenal. These shows about being a dancer or being a singer or being a celebrity or being famous or having a certain amount of likes on Instagram can all be shaming messages because we feel I am not worthy to connect and to belong unless my life is extraordinary and I am spectacular. Shame can get us because of the messages we marinate in. You know, you put like chicken in lovely sauce and you marinate it to get the flavor in. There are shaming messages all the time that are bombarding us and marinating our lives. Words like, you're not good enough. You're not special enough. You're not smart enough. I heard a story about one man who would walk in a room and he would rank everybody in the room by their intelligence. And then he would rank himself to see if, by comparison, he was the most intelligent or the least intelligent. If he walked into the room and felt he was the most intelligent, he felt worthy to connect and worthy to belong and worthy to be seen. If he felt he was the least intelligent, he felt shame and went into the swampland and began to hide. It can be, I'm not spiritual enough. We can feel shame. Have you ever had that? You're in a context where everybody seems to be more spiritual than you, and you think, I'm not worthy to connect and to belong here. So you hide and you don't bring who you are. Shame can be, I'm not important enough. You can feel, actually, my job I do isn't important and significant enough. Have you ever had that? You walk into a room and you feel, what I do is so ordinary and so insignificant, and I'm with all these movers and shakers who got more money than me and more status than me and more power than me, and then you feel shamed. You think, I can't be seen here, I can't connect, I can't belong. It can be, I'm not attractive enough, thin enough, pretty enough. I fail to achieve some ideal that's out there right now. Facebook can be a place of shame. You know, when you compare yourself to other people and the highlights of their life, you can feel, my life is just survival compared to what they're doing that seems to be so spectacular and amazing. So coming out of shame then is like coming out of the swamp and finding the beach. It's like finding the sunshine. It's like finding the water. It's like finding and building a life. Coming out of shame is that wonderful thing about being self-forgetful, being who you were made to be, feeling worthy to connect and to belong in any situation, in any circumstance. So why then do we ever want to stay in the swampland? If the swampland is so terrible, if shame is so awful and destructive, why would any of us want to avoid authenticity, connection, belonging, and being seen? So, true and deep connection requires that we're truly seen. To really connect and to really belong requires that we are genuine, honest, and authentic. But because belonging is so basic and fundamental, and we're hardwired for belonging, the fear of disconnection leads to emotional suffering. So we need to connect and belong, but the idea that I could be rejected or disappointed is so traumatic and so painful. What we settle for is fitting in and seeking approval and remaining hidden. It's like a self-protection thing. To really come alive, we need to be seen. To become self-forgetful and to live in the freedom of the gospel, we need to be authentic and real and honest and be who we are. But that absolutely terrifies us. Because what if the true me isn't enough? What if I disappoint the people around me? And so we choose to remain hidden. Shame, and this is why I think it's a universal human condition rather than just a few of us. Shame makes it unbearable to truly be seen. It makes it absolutely terrifying to truly be seen. What if people saw that I'm actually weak? What if people saw my failures and my struggles? What if people saw that I'm really not coping as a mum or a dad? What if people saw that I'm petrified of failure? What if people saw that I've got lots of doubts and I'm actually struggling with unbelief? What if people saw the real me, saw both my strengths and my struggles? And so we fear judgment. We fear being seen because we fear being judged. And we fear that if I'm truly seen and I'm judged, it will be so traumatic and painful, I prefer to remain hidden. Shame lies to us and tells us it's safer to be secretive and it's safer to be silent about your strengths, because shame speaks to your strengths and your struggles. Shame will say to you, if you are saying who you are, who do you think you are? And it will speak to you about your weaknesses. And so many of us live to one degree or another masking and disguising and performing. It's like we're in our own reality show and we're an actor. It's like we're a chameleon. You know, the animal that turns green if it's on a green and yellow if it's on yellow. We feel like we're chameleons living our life. When everybody around us has got faith, we become green. Oh, I'm going to pretend I've got faith too. And we can find ourselves chameleoning our way through our lives. In this room, I'm yellow. In this room, I'm green. In this room, I'm blue. You never really see who I really am, because I'm terrified if you see who I really am, you'll judge me and I'll experience the pain of shame. And so when we change who we really are, we cease to be seen. And if we're ceasing to be seen, we can't connect and to belong. And not truly connecting and belonging means a fundamental basic need of being human isn't being met. So we live in the swamp. Because if I was truly seen, I might be a disappointment. And if I was truly seen, I might be misunderstood. There's an interesting moment in Galatians chapter 2, and it's when Paul rebukes Peter, because Peter is really happy to eat with the Gentiles. He's really happy to eat their food. He's really happy to be with them. And then some really important people come from Jerusalem. And it's like he changes his color. These people from Jerusalem are separating themselves from the Gentiles. And it's like Peter wants to fit in with the bigwigs, the big leaders. So he changes who he is. He separates himself and performs and pretends, no, I don't eat with the Gentiles. I'm one of the separated people. And then Paul rebukes him for his hypocrisy. He rebukes him for chameleoning his way, for being hidden. and for pretending and performing. Peter needed the courage to be authentic and say, you know what, I'll eat with you, but I also eat with them. That's who I am. I'm fully convinced that in Jesus Christ, all food is okay to eat. I'm not going to pretend to be one thing, and then I'll pretend to be another. And so shame has a huge price tag, because we're going to need some courage if we're going to walk out of shame. We're going to need some bravery to walk out of shame. Shame has a price tag. Shame is the thing that causes us to miss out. Shame is the secret killer of innovation and creativity. Shame will stop us seeing amazing ideas realized. Shame kills experimentation. Shame kills risk. Shame makes it absolutely excruciatingly painful to fail, so we only try things we know we can be successful and do perfectly. Shame can make people never invite someone around for a meal, because what if they find out I can't cook? What if they come around and I've just done such a basic meal? Because shame works on that competitive thing. You know, if you have someone who's a really great cook and you invite them to your house and you feel, I'm not that great a cook, you may never invite them around for a meal because of shame. Because you want to keep that part hidden. Actually, I can only do beans on toast. Shame can stop songs that need to be sung being sung. Shame can say, you're not as good as that person. No one will listen to that song. If people hear you do that, you'll be judged. It can stop books being written. It can stop songs being sung. It can stop things being done. Shame can stop conversations being had. Honest, deep conversations. Because if I say it wrongly, I don't say it well enough, I'll be judged. Shame can leave us measuring the temperature instead of setting it. It takes huge courage in the workplace when there's gossiping going on and you want to fit in and you chameleon. Okay, it's a gossiping environment. I'll become yellow with the gossips. It takes huge courage not to necessarily rebuke people and tell them off, but to be positive and encouraging and talking about the boss or the management and finding out what's praiseworthy and excellent. Because suddenly you think, I'm not connecting and belonging to the gossips. I'm going on the outside. It takes huge courage. The greatest pain in your life is to spend your life on the outside wondering what it would have been like to have been really seen and really known. It's interesting that we rarely consider the culminative effect of decisions. For example, if we discovered tomorrow that vanilla ice cream, just one scoop could kill you, we would stop eating ice cream immediately. Or if we were told that one cigarette can kill you, no one would smoke another cigarette. Or just one bad thought about your husband or wife or family member could destroy relationship completely in a moment, we'd be so vigilant to not have those kind of thoughts. And the reason people carry on eating as much ice cream as they want or smoking as much as they want, as an example, or having as many bad thoughts as they want, is they don't consider the culminative effect of day by day by day by day choosing to do those things. And shame is the same. You know, it doesn't kill your life to walk into one meeting and not be authentic and not be truly seen. It doesn't. It doesn't kill you to walk into one meeting and say, you know what, I'm not going to take a chance and give a prophetic word, because what if it isn't very good and I disappoint and people see that I'm not spiritual? It's not going to kill you to do one meeting like that. It's not going to kill a marriage to have one day where there's not authenticity and honesty. But the culminative effect of day by day by day of living in shame is really debilitating and crippling and painful and shaping everything. Now, What if you do achieve something amazing? What if you do become extraordinary and do something incredible? What if you do sing that song, write that book, cook that meal, and you become extraordinarily successful in it? If your worthiness is connected to an achievement, if your sense of validation, significance, and worth and worthiness is attached to achieving some ideal, some significant thing, and you succeed, you're actually in even deeper trouble. Because shame loves it when you hand over your worthiness to what people think. When you live your life hustling for a posture and a position and some influence or opportunity, and you achieve it, and your worthiness is attached to the achievement, you have handed over your life to shame. And shame will take that and hijack and control your life. You'll suddenly find yourself only able to show yourself succeeding. You'll feel that to keep hold of what you have now achieved that's given you worthiness, you'll feel, I've got to say it all, do it all, perform it all, absolutely perfectly. I've got to do everything absolutely perfect to manage perception. If your worthiness is connected to what you do and you achieve it, shame will grab hold of you and say, you better be a perfectionist. Because if anybody sees you not do it, say it, all perfectly, they're going to think badly of you. It's absolutely impossible to manage people's perception through perfectionism. It's actually impossible. You have zero power over people's perception of you. Zero. You could do it all, say it all, absolutely perfectly, wonderfully, and people could still have an opinion of you that's negative. But we try to manage perception because we are terrified of losing influence, authority, or favor. The fear of judgment, the fear of punishment can make us a slave to proving, protecting, perfecting, pleasing, placating, fear of man, man-pleasing. So shame can get us that way as well. If you think I can get myself out of the swampland through achievement, shame will go, well, brilliant, I've now got my claws in you even deeper. Now, authenticity and vulnerability is quite a challenge because, in truth, the ego only wants gold stars. We've still got that craving in us from school, in one sense. We're longing just to be approved of. We're longing just to get that gold star from somewhere. I'm a significant, worthy person. But I want to say, to walk out of the swampland is a really wonderful thing. And I'd say I'm every day on a journey of wanting to walk out of it. Because one of the things we're going to look at is there's no magic bullet for shame. We can find ourselves in it in a second. But the wonderful promise is we can live self-forgetful. I want to read you a quote from Madonna. Madonna, the singer, achieved incredible things, and she says, my drive in life comes from the fear of being mediocre. That is always pushing me. I push past one spell of it and discover myself a special human being, and then I feel I'm still mediocre, uninteresting, unless I do something else. because even though I have become somebody, I still have to prove I am somebody. My struggle has never ended, and I guess it never will. So shame leaves us feeling nothing we ever do is ever good enough. And like Madonna so clearly highlights there, we'll never find the ultimate verdict through performance or perfection. So, how do we walk out of the swampland? Because, I don't know about you, I want to learn increasingly how to not live in the swamp, how to live on the beach, how to live in the sunshine, how to live in the complete acceptance of God. And the good news, everything we need to walk out of the swamp is already in the good news of what Jesus has done. That Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15:10, I am what I am by the grace of God. I am what I am by the grace of God. That the truth is, right now, every believer can say, I am enough right now. I am enough right now to truly be seen, to truly belong, and to truly connect. Not if, not when, but right now. I don't need to struggle for it. I don't need to hustle for it. I don't need to quest for it. I don't need to perfect for it. I don't need to hide for it. I don't need to chameleon my way through the day. Who I am right now, I'm worthy to connect and to belong. That God says, you are liked, you are loved, including your quirks and including your limitations. That God doesn't love some future version of you. It's not some future version of you that He loves. It's not some idealized you that He loves. It's you right here, right now, your strengths, your struggles, your quirks, your limitations, your frailty, your brokenness, your wonderful wholeness, your progress. He loves you right now. It's not some future version. Because we sometimes say to God, you're really like what I'm working on right now. You'll love the future version of me. I'm fearless, I'm brave, I'm disciplined and courageous. I read and meditate on your word and I'm everything you've always imagined. You'll love the future version of me. You'll love the person who's coming soon. 6 years' time, I reckon, you'll love that person. And God says, I love who you are right now. Like when a baby... I remember our first daughter, when she turned over and you think something's changing, you're moving. It's not, well, I'll love the version of you that's running. You love the turnover baby, the getting up on its feet, the struggling to walk and then the running. You love every single stage and every single moment of their limitations and their strengths and the person they're becoming. You love and you celebrate it all. And God says that about us. That you are worthy now to be seen, to connect, and to belong. So what happens then when we're learning to connect and to belong, and then we get criticized? How did the Apostle Paul cope when people criticized him? Because actually, when we're trying to be ourselves and we're being seen and we're daring to be authentic and vulnerable, and then we get negative feedback and criticism, that can send us running immediately back into the swamp. So what do we do then? So let's look at some verses. 1 Corinthians 3 and verse, I think, 21. Actually 1 Corinthians 4 and verse 3. So this is Paul responding to some feedback from the Corinthians. I care very little if I'm judged by you or by any human court. Indeed, I don't even judge myself. My conscience is clear, but that does not make me innocent. It is the Lord who judges me. When Paul is criticized, he doesn't withdraw into the swampland. He doesn't withdraw. When Paul was criticized, he didn't make himself small and lose confidence. He didn't shrink back and disappear and say, I've received some negative feedback. He didn't people please either. He didn't say, hey, Corinthians, hey, I want you to like me. I'm going to do better in the future. I'm going to really try harder in the future. Don't worry. I can see your feedback, and I'm making myself small, and I'm going to please and placate you and become what you need me to be. He didn't make himself small, and he didn't people please. Neither did he attack back and say, how dare you criticize me? How dare you give me that feedback? You're wrong, and don't you see the sacrifices I've made for you? So criticism didn't devastate Paul. Criticism and negative feedback didn't make him retreat into the swampland. Actually, Paul was never kept up late at night by criticism. And that's what shame can do to us. I've had that. You wake up at 2 a.m. and that conversation, that tape goes through. And then you start to think, I know what I would have. I wish I'd have said this. I'll say that next time. And how dare they say that? Or maybe I'm wrong. And we lose confidence, or we feel angry or devastated. Paul could say, actually, criticism doesn't really devastate me. It doesn't keep me up at night. The reason was, he is living in the reality of the gospel. He is no longer craving or seeking affirmation and approval. He already has it, which makes him able to be self-forgetful. He says, I am enough. I am enough. I am what I am by the grace of God. I am enough. He says, in effect, I really don't care what you think. I don't care what you think. And actually, that's probably a kind of, in Western culture, that's probably how a lot of people are told. This is how you can cope with your critics. You just don't care what they think. Who cares what the rabble thinks? I know who I am. But Paul goes one step further than that. He says, I don't even care what I think. I don't care what you think. I don't care about your opinion of me. But you know what? I don't even care about my opinion of me. And then he says, do you know what? In and of myself, I am secure. My conscience is clean and clear. And then he says, but that doesn't necessarily mean I'm right. It's only God who really knows. And he can justify me. And I'm trusting his verdict, and he can lead, he can guide, he can direct, he can speak to me. So he lives in this wonderful place of like gospel humility. Don't care what you think, I don't care what I think, I care only what God thinks. I am enough. Paul has this amazing capacity to not attach his sin to his identity, and he doesn't attach his accomplishments to his identity either. Because we judge ourselves. So we live in a world where I really care what you think. And actually, I really care what I think. And so we live judging ourselves. So when we feel we're doing really, really well, and we feel we're keeping the standards of our own standards for our life, we feel really confident and courageous. We feel like I could do anything and take anything on. But when we see all kinds of frailty, all kinds of weakness, all kinds of sin, we withdraw into the swampland and say, I don't want to be seen. I've lost all my courage and confidence. So we go from feeling confident and courageous to withdrawing into the swamp, depending on our performance, because we're attaching our sin to our identity. Or we attach our accomplishments to our identity. If we're doing it all, saying it all perfectly, we think, yeah, I'm a worthy person. Now you can see me. I can connect and to belong. But if we don't feel we're achieving and we're not accomplishing anything, we withdraw and become deflated. So many of us live our lives like a balloon. We're inflated one minute. Yeah, I've got accomplishments. And then we see all kinds of weaknesses and we go, we withdraw and we feel deflated. Paul could say this, I am the chief of sinners. Who I am, I know my weaknesses, my limitations and my frailties and my sins. I am the chief of sinners. I know that in every area I'm not yet fully mature and fully sanctified in all my behavior and in all my thoughts. And yet he could say at the same time, God has entrusted me with a work to do and I'm going to do it boldly, confidently and courageously. It's amazing. That's what the gospel can do. Because for Paul, he would say, I'm no longer in the courtroom. I'm not looking for a verdict. The judgment is finished. It's over. I'm no longer in the court. So what Madonna's doing in that quote is, all the time she's collecting evidence for the defense. I'm a special person. I'm a successful person. I'm a unique person. I'm inflated because I've done amazing things. And then it's the next day, I'm back to being ordinary again, back in the swampland. Paul is saying, I really don't care what you or any human court says. I know who I am, and I know I'm accepted. Paul is no longer judging himself. And that's what the gospel can do for us. So we can walk into any room with super intellectual people, and we can feel like we're the dumbest in the room, and we can say, I really don't care what you think, and I don't really care what I think. I know who I am. It means we can walk into any environment without any competition and without any comparison to the people around us and just be who we are in every single environment we are in. See, the other thing that Paul can do is he can speak about his worst stuff. He can say in Corinthians, I don't even deserve to be called an apostle because I murdered God's people. He can say, I'm going to tell you the worst that I am. He can bring out the reality of his limitation. He can speak about it. Shame, the thing that breaks shame immediately is speaking about it. Shame cannot cope with words being wrapped around it. Shame wants to keep you hidden, unseen, in the dark, disconnected and away from people. But when we find trusted people and we bring out, actually, I feel unworthy. I don't just feel like I'm not a good parent. I feel like I'm a bad parent. I don't just feel like I failed. I feel like a failure. I feel like I can't show you my strengths and my struggles. I feel like I need to keep it all covered. Shame wants to keep us silent, secretive. So when we find ourselves in the swampland, we need to find community. And that's why relationships in family are so important. I think Brené Brown says we need around 5 people in our lives that we can be really real with and really authentic with and really honest with. People who truly know us. We need to find people that we can talk about our shame and our fear of disconnection and our fear of judgment so that we can come up from out of it. So freedom is the result of having a life where you can live honestly and authentically, where you can have people around you where you can say, I'm fearing not being enough. And this is where the culture of empathy is really important. That when we bring out into the light to the people we trust who we really are, our strengths and our struggles, what we want to find in those moments is empathy. Now, empathy isn't that we've experienced everything that the person is about to tell us. Empathy is we can connect to the emotions and the feelings under what they're saying. Empathy is that moment where we can say, me too. Yeah, I've felt unworthy. I've felt like a failure. I understand how that struggle can be devastating. That Empathy is like healing balm on a wound. We bring out who we really are and we find kindness and empathy. We find someone who isn't going to tell us how to fix it, but just going to say, you know what, I think I can understand the feelings that are going on under there. And when there's a culture and a community that increasingly has empathy, more and more people, bit by bit, begin to show themselves to one another. The other thing I want to land with, really, is that shame is also about the courage to show who we really are. It's not just the, I'm going to show you what's messy and the struggles, that being liberated from shame is the capacity to show who you really are with your strengths as well. And see, we see that with Jesus in Luke chapter 4 and verse 16. And there's a kind of shaming messages going on, you know, we know who you are, we know who your mum and dad is, we know your past, we know your story, we know Joseph and Mary, we know that the circumstances around your birth, we know all of that. And Jesus stands up and he's going to show them who he is, and he says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me. Because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom to the prisoners and recovery of sight to the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. But shame wants to keep us hidden so that we don't tell people what we carry. We don't tell people about the prophecies we have. We don't tell people our dreams and the call of God on our life and our dreams for, whether it's for Folkestone or where you work or your family or other nations. We keep that hidden because we are scared of someone saying, who do you think you are? That message of get back in your box. Don't think so highly of yourself. We call it tall poppy syndrome in the UK, don't we? We love the underdog, but we don't like the person who's super confident, knows who they are, knows what they carry. And I think that's part of self-forgetfulness as well. I'm not attaching this thing I carry to my identity, but Paul says, I've been entrusted with something and I'm going to be bold with it and I'm going to let you see it. And Jesus says the same. I am the Messiah. I am the Christ. You can have all these things you want to say about me, but I'm going to tell you who I am, and I'm going to show you who I am. I'm not going to hide my confidence. I'm not going to hide my calling. I'm not going to hide my ability. I'm going to tell you who I am. It's like Paul says to Timothy, Timothy, remember the prophetic words that were spoken over you. Remember what happened when hands were laid onto you. And fight according to those prophetic words. Fight according to the assessment of heaven. Fight according to the promises, the perspective of God on you. Don't go back and think, who do you think you are? No, fight and stand up and say, I'm not going to go into the swamp land. I'm not going to be hidden. I'm going to be bold. I'm going to be courageous. I'm going to tell you who I am. That God's got a huge call on you and the prophetic words that you've got and the things that are on your heart for Folkestone and this area, prophetic things that you carry, the things that you're on earth for. Be bold with those things. Tell one another those things. Tell one another the contribution that you carry to this. Be bold with it. Don't practice kind of false humility and hide. See, what qualifies you is his call on you and how he sees you. Not perfectionism of we've got it all perfect, but what have you entrusted to us? What have you given to us? What do we carry from you? One of the shaming messages I received as a kid, and I remember being 15 and about to do O-levels and stuff, and I wasn't really doing brilliantly at school, if I'm honest. I wasn't really achieving very well at school, and I wasn't very practical either. And in my family, my dad's dad had gone to the factory to ransoms, and they'd worked in manufacturing. My dad had gone there. My dad had was a practical man working as an engineer in a power station. And I think he one day just got frustrated and thought, what's going to happen to this boy? He's not particularly excelling in the world of academic, and he's not very practical. And in a working class family, really, guys got practical jobs. And I think just out of a desire to spur me on and encourage me, he said what was really a shaming message. He said, you'll never fit into a man's world. And I don't think I thought much about it, but it obviously, I think this is, sometimes words get spoken, and if we've all said things, we need to make sure, because sometimes you say something like, you think, oh, I've said something like that before, I've wounded. You know, you have to be forgiving to yourself. We've all made mistakes, we've all said the wrong thing. Sometimes we do the best we can with the skills we have, and I think that's what my dad was doing right then. But it became like an arrow in my heart. And so I took this message, this shaming message of real men are practical, real men are DIY men. And that kind of message didn't really, it just sat there in my heart for about 10 years. And I got married. And as soon as I got married, I thought, real men, they fix things. Real men, they build things. Real men, they put up shelves and they don't fall down. And real men are handy. And so I took that into married life. And Rochelle, my wife, is actually incredibly able at DIY, reading plans, reading IKEA, putting things together. I don't even know what way it is up. And every time we did something practical, it was like I went back into the swampland. I thought, real men can do this. I'm failing. I am a failure. My identity is I am a failure. I remember we'd moved house, and I said, I will put the lamp up. I will. And she was very kind and said, yeah, you do that and go for it. Seriously, 4.5 hours later, I'm still fiddling to try and put these two wires in a lamp. And I'm feeling shame. I'm feeling annoyed. And in the end, I have to concede, I can't do this. And she, I'll do it. And she does it in 10 minutes. And I'm thinking, if only she had struggled. Please just struggle for an hour. But 10 minutes, it's such a, I felt so much shame. I remember one day in a church building, I wanted to put a doorknob back on a door and it fell off. And I just felt I heard God laugh and think, you are funny. And shame can speak messages to us. And we need to be able to say, I am what I am. I am actually very limited practically. Probably got some dyscalculia. Remember once I tried to put some telephone cable through a wall, and I thought, if you drill this side and you drill the other side, you're going to get the cable through. Apart from I went this way here and this way this, and whole part of the plaster fell. And Rochelle that day, actually, she literally cried as she came back to the house where I had attempted this amazing thing. But I am what I am. It's that feeling of saying, you know what, I don't have to be what others want me to be. I've got strengths, I've got struggles. Grace even says to ask us, is that message even realistic? Actually, real, you'll never fit into a real, into a man's world because you're not practical. That message is actually not the truth. It's a perspective, it's a narrow perspective, but it's not the truth. It's not the broadest truth. You can't find anywhere, apart from the fact Jesus is a carpenter, that that real men have to be able to put shelves up is not there. That message is not realistic. Actually, is that really what the people around me need? Did Rochelle on that day really need me 4.5 hours struggling with a lamp? Or would it have been better to, in all humility, to say, I'm not very good at that. I'll look after Fleur, the baby, because I'm not better at that than her, but I could have done that and she could have got on with that and we would have had the afternoon. Is that really what people need? So that's what perfecting does. It makes us perform and think that's what people need, and that may be not what they really need. Is it even attainable? I don't know. Could I get better at it? Probably. But is it really that attainable? And do I even want to be that? And to land, there isn't a magic bullet for shame. Like, it's not like Nessel Stanley wants to be free of ever being tempted to go into the swampland. Brené Brown says, as long as we care about connection, the fear of disconnection will be a powerful force in our lives. You know, we might feel comfortable in one social setting, and then suddenly you get promoted and you're in another social setting, or another work setting, or another group, or another opportunity. There's always going to be that temptation to think, do I need to perform here and hide here and not show who I am? That the fear of disconnection is actually all around us all the time. So what we really need then is shame resilience. It's the capacity to hear a shaming message of feeling I'm not enough, I need to hide, I'm not worthy, to spot it really quickly and to bounce back. To be really self-aware and know when you're in shame, to know what are the shame messages whispering to you. That you're not spiritual enough, or you're not smart enough, or you haven't done enough, or you're not perfect enough, or you're not special enough, or you've not achieved enough, or who do you think you are? To be aware of the shame tapes and what they're whispering. And then when you find yourself in shame and you're feeling that attack on your identity of I am a failure or I am a bad person and who do I think I am, to then whisper to yourself really with kindness and generosity and compassion and warmth and understanding. Speak to yourself like you would to your best friend who suddenly finds themselves in shame. Speak to yourself with kindness, with understanding, with compassion, with gentleness. Some of us, when we fail and get things wrong and we suddenly hear a shaming message, we say, you are unworthy, you idiot, you're a failure, you've got it wrong. We retreat into harsh self-criticism because we believe the lie that if we're really harsh on ourselves and critical, it's going to motivate us to maturity. Actually, harsh self-criticism makes us retreat and run into the swampland and hide. When we find ourselves messing up, we don't want to go into perfectionism. We want to be kind to ourselves and say, you know what? Okay, that's not the best way of saying it, but you did the best you could in that moment. Now go and clean up your mess, as Danny Silk would say. Forgive yourself. Ask for, you know, actually say you're sorry where you need to. Clean up your mess. When you find yourself in a situation where you're in shame, walk through it with authenticity. Reach out to one of the trusted people in your life and say, you know what? Right now, I'm absolutely terrified of failure in my new job. I'm absolutely terrified that they might see how frail and lacking confidence I am and how insecure I am. I'm terrified. If they see that, they're going to judge me and punish me and remove opportunity. I'm in shame. Let people know. It's going to pray for us to finish. Can I invite us to stand? And Yeah, just to, as a church, you carry huge aspects of what this local community needs. And that gets released to the community and released into your family, and you become increasingly who you're called to be by God, as grace works in you, and there's this courage to innovate and to experiment and do things and try things and have a go at things and fail and get up and go again. That God is even right now just saying, he's going to ask him for a fresh wave of the gift of words of knowledge. A fresh wave of words of knowledge that are going to be specific and are going to lead to breakthroughs and healing. And that's going to require the courage to have a go, speak out, and step out. Because shame will say, who do you think you are? And what will people think if no one puts their hand up? And what will people think if you look wrong? Grace says, go for it. So we ask you, Holy Spirit, for a wave of fresh wave of words of knowledge that lead to people being healed and set free. We ask you for that courage to bring them to step out, to fail, to get up, go again, and not connect it to your identity and think, oh, I'm bad. No, you never know. Maybe no one put their hand up, but how many times we've seen this. No one responds, and then someone gets healed, and you hear about it a few weeks ago, after. So we don't judge ourselves in the moment. And I pray as well for a fresh wave of creativity and innovation and experimentation. I pray for that courage to just go for it, because you just felt, wow, there's something on this, God, and I'm just going to go for it. I'm going to try this thing. I'm going to do this thing. I'm just going to have a go. Yeah, we pray for that capacity to risk and to make changes, and pray for that gift of worthiness that catapults us out to try new things, that to be a community of innovation and experimentation, so that the grace that you carry will flow out to people around you, because you're not ever going to be feeling, you're going to have this new courage that makes you self-forgetful and thinks, you know what, I may not be able to put the right words to it and say it all perfectly, but I'm going to let my life flow out to the people around me. Yeah, I pray for a fresh courage, even of saying, this is who I am, and this is why I'm on earth, and this is why God has placed me here in this family right now, because I carry something. I've got grace, I've got capacity, I've got prophetic calling, and I'm going to allow that to flow out to other people. Just feel God would say that there is no one who should disqualify themselves from being a flow of grace to someone else. You all have gifts, you all have talents, you all have abilities, you all have anointings. You all can grow in the whole areas of a prophetic. You can grow in the whole areas of seeing the sick healed. You can grow in these things. So I pray for a real boldness and courage on you as a group of people. And yeah, and Jesus, I pray for this church and its influence in the area. And we just say that there'd be this such an increasing sense of, we are on earth to bring hope increasingly to our community. We're on earth to bring change, and we're on earth to bring breakthrough. And we are on earth to see more of heaven invade this place, and then see more community transformation like in your vision statement. We're going to make a difference, and the community are increasingly going to know we're here because we are bold and courageous with the prophetic words that God has placed in us. We will not listen to the shaming message of, who do you think you are? But we're going to say, we know who we are. We know who we are. We're called and loved and worthy. We're going to show you who we are, because we know this has all been grace and kindness, and he's made us worthy. Yeah, so Holy Spirit, we pray for the courage to be seen and to be known. We pray, Jesus, for increasing courage to step out of any swamplands that we find ourselves in. And we pray for the courage to be who we are, to be seen, to be quirky, to be funny, to be awkward when we're sometimes awkward, to let who we are be seen, our frailties, our strengths, our weaknesses, to be really known, to not feel we've got to wear a mask and pretend, but to be increasingly a culture, a community that we just connect and to belong, that we've got deep friendships where we're just fully known and there's nothing hidden. And I ask you, God, that the community of Sherrington and Folkestone would look on at this church and be jealous for the way that people connect and to belong to each other. I pray that people would look on in increasing numbers and say, I want what you've got. I want this authenticity. I want to be able to connect and to belong and to be seen. In your name, Jesus. In your name, Jesus. Yeah, and just God, we just break any glass ceiling upon people's heads of limitation. I'll never be more than this. I'll always be hidden. And just ask you to break that, Jesus. We ask you to break it, God, that we won't be scared of being seen. We won't be scared of being seen. We won't need it to be something, but we won't be scared of it either. Yeah, Jesus. Thank you. Amen.